Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
He's with us every day talking football on 710 ESPN Seattle. The professor, John Clayton, is here. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Hey, so what's going on with New Orleans? They were scheduled to host the Super Bowl in 2024, but because of the league's plan to expand to a 17-game schedule, then that puts that in jeopardy. What's the deal with that?
Well, you know, Bourbon Street's going to be too occupied because that's right around Mardi Gras time. And obviously Mardi Gras is one of the most important things that they have. And if they're talking about, you know, moving everything back to the Mardi Gras, then there's going to be a problem there. So, you know, that's something they're looking ahead to. And they kind of realize that how important Mardi Gras is in the history of the city and the history of the area, that I think that's where they're a little troubled by it and they have to figure something out.
Hey, John, we just heard a social media plea by Russell Wilson to get Clowney signed, and please don't leave us, and this and that. And it just and the 206 texted in, I thought the exact same thing. Maybe Russ should restructure his contract, and maybe they can get him in here. But do you think we're gonna see that from him, though? Because Brady did that down the road, not necessarily this year. But when do you think that we're gonna see that happen with Russell Wilson?
No, I can't see his agent doing that. I mean, that's not the nature of his agent's way he does business. But, I don't – and again, you being a former player, it's like, why should you take a hometown discount? I mean, certainly, you know, if they need cap room, he'll, you know, replace base salary with signing bonus, and you get the cap room like that. I mean, he's earned the ability to be the highest paid guy as in the National Football League with the play at quarterback because of the timing of how he got the deal and all that stuff. It's going to be surpassed. I mean, within a year, he's probably going to be, you know, the fourth or fifth highest paid. But, you know, why should he give up money that he can earn and has earned? Because, you know, and particularly at a time right now where you have the ability to, you know, have a lot of money coming in the next several years with a very increased cap. So, no, I think that's a bad notion. You know, he's earned what he's earned. But now, of course, I mean, you know, the only way he can change it is on the next contract. He can give them cap room, and I'm sure he has no problem doing that. He's already done it. But, you know, again, there's enough cap room right now to do something with Clowney. It's just a matter that Clowney is either not listening to Russell Wilson or not listening to logic with the way that he's doing his contract.
Yeah, and so the only reason is just because, you know, you've seen this with Tom Brady, you know, and he kind of set the precedent for that. And, you know, and I don't believe in it either. I mean, you sign your contract, you play it out. Russell's the most important player. But, you know, just because Brady is probably what – if he has he given hometown discounts that are significant enough to like, what, 20, 30 million, you think, over the years?
I think he's given about $31-32 million at my count. I mean, because basically he's been playing for top quarterback 70 cents on the dollar since 2013. You know, when they did at that time until 2013 made him the highest paid quarterback. But of course, I mean, you know, his circumstance is different. And it's like, you know, you talk about trends and you talk about trendsetters and all that stuff. You know, Le'Veon Bell, you know, with his holding out and missing the whole season with the franchise tag. Boy, that was a great trendsetter. Did you see anybody repeat that? And the answer is no. You have Melvin Gordon's holding out into the middle of the season, and that came back to be a disaster. And then with this case and Tom Brady, it's like, you know, Tom Brady is one of the few people in the world who is making, you know, $18 million a year, and his wife was making more. And so it's like, okay, I'll give you a little bit of discount on the dollar just because you can try to get more players. And of course, last year they didn't get the players for him, and you can kind of see that you know, it got to a point where it's like, okay, it's time to leave and go down to Tampa Bay. But this is not a trendsetter because nobody else really is going to do this, and nor should they.
Well, John, let's say Clowney just milks this thing out and just extends it into May or whatever, past the draft. What does this do for the Everson Griffins of the world, Michael Bennett, Clay Matthews, Marcus Golden? At some point, they're going to have to sign with somebody.
At some point, they've got to sign with somebody, and at some point, Jadeveon Clowney's got to recognize the mess that he's got himself into. You know, by not lowering his demand from 22, 23 million to 17 the first couple of days of free agency, you know, he blew that. Okay, and so now he goes into the second week, and things get even worse because all the teams in the 4-3 start filling out what they were doing for the 4-3, so that took him out of those teams. And then, of course, then you have to start looking at the 3-4 teams, and, of course, that's less money, and so you're not going to get over $21 million. He blew that. Then the second thing that he blew was going into the period now where you can't get a physical. And it's like, you know, he obviously knows he's had the injury history. He's missed 20 games in 6 years. He's coming off core surgery. You know, he's had other injuries along with a microfracture. You know, a team wants to check him out if they're going to invest $17 million. But he was late in doing that, and now he's in an even tougher spot. And now to even add to some of the things that we've been hearing over the last couple of days, I did find out with the Jets, you know how much interest there was in being able to pay. And again, this is not you know what I think of Clowney. I think he's sensational. But the Jets had one phone conversation with his agent at the very beginning, and no conversation since. The Jets are taking the position that last year they spent $172 million in contracts, you know, one of the highest in the league on deals, and of course it didn't necessarily work out, you know, with the C.J. Mosley deal and the Le'Veon Bell deal and all that stuff. And then, you know, so they came back this year and they weren't going to be big spenders. And so right now they're going to spend less than $100 million and they didn't pay anybody over 9.1 that George Fant got. And so you can see that they're not going to step up and pay $17 million to bring him in. That's just not in their nature this year. And then on Tennessee, I still go by the idea. It's like, okay, they've already invested $13 million on one-year contracts for two pass-rushing outside linebackers. And, and Clowney's would be silly to sign a long-term deal, so he's not going to give them cap relief. So basically, they're going to kill up the rest of their cap and have $26 million on three outside linebackers or $28 million. I don't see it.
Well, Professor, with all due respect, can I just flat out disagree with you about the 3-4 and 4-3? I can't imagine if you have a 3-4 defense that you're going to look at Clowney differently and say to his agent, hey, you know what, pal, we're not going to give you your $17 or $18 million because of this 3-4 defense, because there's still, whether you're a 3-4 defense or a 4-3, understand you're not putting your hand in the ground and all that nonsense. I mean, I guess I shouldn't call it nonsense, but I get frustrated.
Why is that
by
nonsense?
That argument. Well, I get frustrated by that argument because I'm thinking the 3-4 defense team, they're going to want Clowney doing the same stuff that a 4-3 defense wants, so I don't see how that's going to change the salary that he's going to get.
Okay, so let me go back to you on this. How many outside linebackers are making more than $17 million a year? Okay, I'll give you the answer.
No idea,
the answer,
John,
is two. Von Miller at 19, right? And then you've got Khalil Mack at 23.5. They are the only two making more than $17 million a year as an outside linebacker. The market right now for pass rushing outside linebackers is in the 16s to 17s. Here's the difference at the defensive end position, you know, on a 4-3. I mean, you Frank Clark got $20.8 million. You got three, four, or five guys getting over $20 million. So there's a $3 to $4 million a year difference, and that's just the facts. And so if you're an outside linebacker in a 3-4, and you know, certainly it can change. I mean, Mac was able to get 23.5, but if you can't get it, and only two players have been able to get that as a 3-4 linebacker. So you tell me, more players have been able to get it at the defensive end. There's a significant difference in price the way it is for a defensive end in a 4-3 versus somebody who's an outside linebacker in a 3-4. It's a fact.
Yeah. Okay. All right, John. But if I'm Clowney, I'm thinking to myself or telling my agent, you know, okay, Khalil Mack, Von Miller, maybe I'm not as good as those two players, but I'm certainly in the neighborhood, and you can even make the argument that he is as good as those two players.
Okay, but so now he's lowered to 17, and when the market's pretty well run its course, so you notice it's like if somebody offered it now, he'd take it. Nobody's offering it right now. And name me the 3-4 team that can offer it. You know, I'll give you the example. Last year, the Green Bay Packers did a phenomenal job. You know, they went out and they paid Za'Darius Smith, and they came back and got Preston Smith. You know, they paid close to $30 million a year for those two players. And they went to the NFC Championship game. But here's where the difference is. You know, they did it on long-term deals that the first-year cap number is much lower. You know, like in this case, and I use Tennessee as the example, you're going to have $30 million of your cap tied up in three positions that are, you know, on the outside. You can't do it. It just doesn't work. And particularly, you want to bring Logan Ryan back. I mean, at the moment, once they get the Korea contract in, they're going to be at $20 million of cap room. I mean, they're in a position that they're probably one of their best defensive players, Jarrell Casey, they had to ship him out for cap reasons, you know, and send him to the Denver Broncos for a seventh-round pick. You know, again, these are things you can't do. And so he just misread the market.
Hey, John, I saw that Bill O'Brien tried to defend the trade of DeAndre Hopkins. Did you see this?
Yeah.
What did you? It's a big long comment, and just for people who haven't read it, I'll just summarize. He wanted a raise, and we weren't going to give him a raise. Is essentially what it boiled down to. But he felt like they got great compensation and all that. What did you think of what he had to say?
It's wrong. I mean, false news. I mean, because you can't tell me it's like, okay, we can disagree on this or not disagree, but DeAndre Hopkins is a better receiver than Stephon Diggs, okay? And so in the trade for Stephon Diggs, the Minnesota Vikings got a first-round pick and three other picks. But the big thing is they got the first-round pick. Then you look at the deal that was done by Bill O'Brien. He didn't get a first-round pick. He got a second-round pick. He had to take on the $13 million a year contract of David Johnson. And so now, I mean, and certainly I think what's going to be considered one of the worst trades in NFL history, you know, he gave up way too much. And then he's also in a position where, you know, he has to come back, and he made the trade for Laremy Tunsil, overpaid on that one, two first and a second, and now has to pay him over $19 million a year to keep him. And so, you know, you look at that, and, you know, you've watched the Rams. You know, they went for the go-for-it mentality and are paying the price this year. You know, you can see that Minnesota did that, and now they're paying the price. Houston's the next team is going to pay the price, and, you know, eventually that will probably make Bill O'Brien pay the price.
Hey, John, where are you on, I know we're just kind of recapping here, as far as delaying the draft, and the only reason I bring it up is because James Franklin, Penn State head coach, said that he thinks that, you know, a lot of the players would really benefit from the NFL delaying the draft.
Yeah, but the problem is, how long can, I mean, do you know when to delay it to? That's where the issue is. And at some point, you know, because, you know, the execution of the draft can be done by teleconferencing. Simple as that. I mean, you have scouts that work all year, you know, studying the players and all that. Sure, there's going to be more mistakes in this year's draft because, you know, you may have missed on an injury. You know, you may have missed on a character evaluation. You're going to miss on taking some of the guys that didn't get invited to the combine and maybe miss on those guys. But in the end, you know, it's like, you know, we don't know. Because now you see every different day, you know, different governors in the state and different people in the government, you know, saying, well, this thing's not going to, you know, it's not going to start making a downturn until May. It's not going to do it until April. It's not going to do it until June, July. I mean, it's like you've got something that you can execute and do. Is it perfect? No. Was free agency perfect this year? No. But you see, it was executed where there's been over 250 deals. So I think, you know, you might as well just do the draft, even though it's going to be uncomfortable, because you can still do it. I mean, you can get on a conference call. You take, you know, 15 minutes in the first round, 10 in the rest, and you make the pick, and then you move on.
John, Amari Cooper, 5 years, $100 million. Boy, Rex Ryan taking a lot of heat for calling him a turd and then had to apologize.
He deserves to apologize. I mean, he needed to do even more than that, because that's just inexcusable. To take a personal shot like that at a guy who's a really good guy. I mean, you talk to the people in Dallas, you talk to the people in Oakland, used to cover the Raiders, and so they'll tell you, it's like, he's not a bad guy. It's not like he's a diva. I mean, he runs good routes. I mean, he's a good person. And to call him a turd? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, is there a history?
Wait a minute. Can I just follow up real quick on this one? I'm sorry, Bob. I totally jumped. Yeah, I was just, you know, I was just like going to plead with everybody that please don't take away turd from us. Please don't take turd away from us. It's still a good description. I just thought the thing was that he totally missed on that. Amari Cooper is most definitely not a turd, and I don't know why. I just think he misused it. But I'm like, please, let's not make it politically incorrect to call people turds, because that would be probably about half of my show prep would go away because of that.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, that's show prep. But also, I mean, you know, if you let's say that you don't like Antonio Brown, okay, and you see some of the things that he did. If
is
you
he
didn't
a turd?
Like Greg Hardy,
yeah.
Was that?
Yeah,
I mean, so, my opinion,
yeah,
no, I mean, but you, I mean, he's a problem. But again, if somebody has a background, you know, like a Greg Hardy or somebody like that, then you can say it. But to take somebody like that, I mean, it's almost as bad as what we saw with Myles Garrett, you know, accusing Mason Rudolph of using, you know, the N-word. And it's like, well, and you can't prove it. I mean, yeah, it's an assassination. And it's like, it's just not fair and it's not right. And we all know, doing live stuff every day, that if something comes out of your mouth wrong, you better apologize, because if not, you're putting yourself in a position where you're not going to be on the air again.
Yeah, John, I did see him apologize, and it was pretty good one. So
360 has a question, John, wondering why teams can't outsource for a health professional to give a player a physical. Is it about them wanting their own doctors to look at them? What's the answer to that one?
Yeah, it's mostly the fact that you want your own doctor to be able to look at him and do it. That's why in some of these cases where these deals fall through, the player like Michael Brockers, who ended up getting his physical and re-signing with the Rams, go back there. But it's like, particularly, you know, guys that have been in the league, you know, 8, 7 years and all that. And so, you know, because one of the reasons that you can't do it is that any of the league doctors have been mandated by the Physicians Association not to do any, because, again, they would rather say, hey, keep the physician available to work on the virus and try to help people that way, as opposed to, you know, taking a priority of a player over everybody else. And so, you know, it's pretty well tough. And that's why, I mean, you know, there's so many of these deals that can come apart. We've already seen 4 of them come apart, and mostly it's because of injuries, and you're going to see that happen. Because again, when you, like, for example, if you send somebody to an independent doctor and he says, oh, he's fine, and then all of a sudden you realize, no, he's not fine, then you want to get out of it. And again, some teams can be devious about that, because you get a deal, then all of a sudden you find, oh, I can get this guy for less. I mean, you know, I can't say the 4 teams that did it so far are that way, but you've seen this in the past, and it can happen in the future.
Hey, John, I'm going to try and get you to agree with me on something here, and I know that I have a difficulty in doing that. But Ngakoue, with all of his tweets lately, it sure seems like he's trying to force his way out of Jacksonville. And I think it was yesterday he was complaining about the approach that management has had in Jacksonville. It's not really the money. And then today he tweeted, who needs pass rush? It sure seems like a disgruntled guy down there. And maybe it'll be like Clowney last year in Houston, where it's finally going to reach a point for the Jaguars to say, oh, God, enough of this guy. Let's get him out of here. Let's ship him somewhere. And maybe that's when Seattle swoops in if they don't get Clowney, and maybe they can make a deal with Ngakoue. What do you think? Do you agree?
Very well could be. It could be one of the reasons why John Snyder hasn't put a deadline on Clowney, you know, because Clowney at this stage doesn't know which way he wants to go and just wants more time to be able to sort it out and figure it out. And so, yeah, I mean, you'd have to think that that's got to be a consideration. Because, again, you know, and what he's saying is echoing some of the things that other players have said. You know, you remember Jalen Ramsey did the same thing, and they were able to get great value for him with at least 2 first-round picks. And so, you know, I think they're thinking the same thing. But the problem is the market is dry right now for that. And so, you know, Jacksonville will wait it out because they want something probably between the Frank Clark deal and the Dee Ford deal. You know that Seattle, I think, would be involved in that. But if they give up the first, they've got to get a second in return.
Hey, John, what is your take on this battle between Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles? I mean, they pick up the contract of Foles, who's got like $21 million guaranteed in his contract. They spent a second overall pick in 2017 on Trubisky, and then you spend that much money on a guy to come in and compete with him? I mean, this, if I'm a Bears fan, this looks terrible.
No, but I think what you can see is that this is going to work out in this way. And, they had the press conferences there in Chicago today, teleconferences. And what they said, remember, you know, his 4-year, $88 million deal is no longer. He basically renegotiated and did a 3-year deal at $24 million. So he is now taking $14 million less a year than what was on his original contract. And so that he did it that way. Matt Nagy worked with him in Kansas City. couple of the Philadelphia coaches are in Chicago, worked with him there. Now, they came out today and said when the season starts, Mitch will be behind center. So he's going to start the season, but Foles eventually, if Mitch struggles, is going to take over. The one thing that will also kind of tell you which way this is going is that they have to make a decision, you know, by May whether they want to put the fifth-year option on him. You know, and that's going to be a $24 million charge next year, and they won't do it. And guess what? Nick Foles has a three-year contract. So does that tell you something? So it's like there seems not there's more of a commitment to Nick, but there's more of a long-term commitment to Nick. And even though he may just be a placeholder for next year, you get the feeling that Nick's going to eventually beat him out and then be the starting quarterback at the beginning of next season.
Hey, John, what's going on with the Eli Apple deal? How did that get nixed? I cut out there for a second, but I'm not sure if you guys talked about this. But he was the one that forced the fumble last year on Chris Carson in that Saints game. I guess the deal with the Raiders got nixed, huh?
Yeah, because what happens now, and this is, again, the team judgment, you know, if they have a question about an injury and can't get the physical, and Eli Apple is like all the other players right now since, you know, what, a week ago Monday, that can't get the physicals, you know, they take the tag, you know what, we're just going to go on, move on this, and they ended up taking Demarius Randall, paying him half the amount, even though he's more of a safety cornerback, not the outside cornerback that Eli Apple is. But again, you're going to see much more of this because, you know, if you have, you know, second thoughts on the guy that you gave good money to, and they gave good money to him at $6 million, you can just come back and fail him on the physical because that's where the team physician, you know, is the one that has to make the decision on it. And if the team doctor says, you want me to fail him on the physical? Boy, I'm failing him on the physical. And those deals will fall apart. So we've had four so far, and only one player was able to make it back, and that was at a $6 million total discount, you know, in Michael Brockers. And again, everybody else right now, in fact, you know, all the Seahawks right now, if they have some second thoughts on it, you know, they won't be able to assemble to training camp. And if they come in and there's something wrong in the physical, deal falls apart.
John, you doing your show tomorrow?
Yes, indeed. 8 to 9.
All right. John, taking your calls tomorrow. Have a great weekend, John. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Okay, sounds good.
There you
Thanks,
go,
John.
The Professor John Clayton with us every day. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Hey, coming up later in the show, typically we do mean text, but we're putting a twist on mean text today. I was fighting for, you know, keep text mean again, make text mean again, but I got outvoted. So with the news that the shelter-in-place order was extended until May 4th, we want to know who's driving you crazy at your house, whether it's your kids, your dog, your significant other, roommate, whatever it is. Send us your quarantine pet peeves, and we'll read them coming up later on in the show. It's so a little spin on mean text. You can send in the mean ones as well if you want those. But, yeah, we'll put a little spin for the day on that. That's coming up later in the show, so text those in to 710-710. Meanwhile, settle in, get comfortable. It's time for another edition of Story Time with Dave Wyman. That's next with Bob, Dave, and
Moore
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
I brought you a special present.
What is it?
Open it up.
As I was limping over there to beat him, if you grab the guy's face mask and twist his head, then, like I tried to do to Terry Obey that cut me into the mud, you know, that is something that's different, and that's a penalty.
It's become a favorite of the listeners of the Bob, Dave, and Moore show here on 710 ESPN Seattle, a story time with Dave Wyman. What do you have on the line for us today, Dave?
Well, I think it's a favorite with Jim Moore because he gets to sit there and not say anything. Although, today, I think he's said enough. Anyway, no, I'm kidding, Jim.
I was instructed not to blurt anything out during this segment.
Yeah, exactly. If you're clever enough. So this goes back to 1988, boys and girls. 1988, after maybe the worst year of my life, in 1987. Now, I did graduate from Stanford that year. I did get drafted into the NFL, which was a lifelong dream. But shortly after I got drafted, the Seahawks drafted Bosworth. Then when I got up into camp, my shoulder kept popping out, and it was so painful that I would almost pass out. And then, you know, I would just keep playing. I kept playing on it. Then I get traded Well, first there was the strike, the NFL strike, which was brutal. Lost four game checks because of that. Then I got traded to the 49ers, which was great. Was back home, and then I failed the physical. And then also later on that year, my girlfriend slash fiance, she broke up with me. And I've told you guys this before. She was a Stanford girl, and she asked me in the off season, you know, what are you going to do? She wanted me to be a rocket scientist in the off season, and I said, I'm going to work on my bench and, you know, lift weights and, you know, work out. So she didn't like that answer. So anyway, I went back to Stanford in the off season. I rented a place for a little while until I found a house, which I should have kept this house. It was built in like 1908, and it had some problems with it and everything, but it was like two blocks from Stanford. I mean, that house, if I'd have just rented it out to football players, whatever, it'd be worth $4 million. So anyway, but one of the things one of the guys that I was hanging out with back then was a guy, it was my running mate, linebacker at Stanford named Barry McKeever. And by the way, Barry, he played with me my senior year, and then he was, you know, training. So I went back, and him and I were working out. Barry's like a cartoon character. He's just hilarious. And if you look this up real quick, I won't go into it, but if you've ever heard of the McKeever twins, MC, big K-E-E-V-E-R, and look up USC football history. His dad and brother were twins that played there and were somewhat controversial and like all Americans and everything. But so Barry and I are working out. He gets me to go see this doctor in San Francisco that somehow he got word of. It was a little bit south of San Francisco in a place called San Carlos. And it was just this nutrition and performance specialist or whatever. And so I'm like, all right, yeah, I'll go along. I've never been into, you know, taking supplements and things like that. So, you know, I was always kind of just, yeah, work hard. That's how you get ahead. And, you know, all the taking vitamins and things like that, just I didn't think really helped that much. So, but I agreed to go see this guy. Well, here's what they were doing. They were using they were getting minerals and vitamins and stuff to, you know, whatever you were lacking in. And how they tested what you were lacking in is that they needed you to fill up this bag of hair that was from somewhere other than like on top of your head. Anything that was exposed to sunlight or air or whatever, you had to get hair in order for them to test it. So, you know, armpit, nether regions. And for me, like I'm fairly hairless. You know, I don't have a lot of hair on my chest, my back, anything. And they ended up having to take it like from the nape of my neck, you know, like the hair that was up on the back of your neck. But I'll never forget this part. I came back to the nurse and I'm like, hey, I could only get it this full. And she looks at it and she looks at me and goes, oh, poor guy. I'm like, what? Wait a minute, do I lack virility or something? Why poor guy? Why did she say that? I have no idea. So anyway, I finally get enough, you know, and so then they test it and everything, and there were some pretty cheesy things about this. I mean, one of them, it was called the SNAC system, so that stood for Scientific Nutrition for Advanced Conditioning. And the other thing about it was the doctor was more of like a carnival barker than he was a doctor. And then when they gave us these, you know, bottles that had, it was kind of like those homemade pills that you can make, you know, it's like a clear capsule and you put, you know, whatever it's in there. It was, I guess, zinc, iron, calcium, stuff like that. And they gave you what you were supposedly lacking. So I went, you know, I was like, all right, I'll take this. And one of the reasons why I stopped, first of all, I said, I don't really like taking, like, Bob, I know you take your vitamins every day. I'm terrible at that. Either I forget or I just am not interested enough to do it to remember to take them. But the other reason why I stopped taking it is because I started feeling really good. Like, I felt really strong and, you know, I could lift harder and, you know, work out harder. And I just started feeling good. And I just, in the back of my mind, I was like, there's just something that doesn't quite square up here. So I just stopped doing it because honestly, I started feeling good. And I thought, there's got to be something wrong here. Well, the doctor who I mentioned, which was the Carnival Barker type of guy, I don't know if anybody recognizes this name. His name was Victor Conti. Victor Conti is the Balco guy. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah. And so I think he had my name on his, on a website or something. Gosh, did we even have websites back then? I think I saw it somewhere. Maybe he had it printed out, you know, because he wanted to get this thing going and, you know, get more clients in the sports world and everything. So, I think my name was on there. I did look at one point. You can go on the internet. I didn't go and look or anything, but I think at one point it was. But, you know, I'm 90%, 75 to 90% sure that those were, you know, that those pills were filled with zinc and iron and calcium and stuff. And I think, you know, he started to go the steroid route after that. I can just tell you that I didn't do it for very long, and I, of course, did not test positive for anything. And I would have been so pissed if I had tested because, you know, but it was stupid of me. You know, I think because, number one, it wasn't like some FDA-approved thing. It was just some, like, in a strip mall or something. So that part, you know, on my part was dumb. But also, I would just say, trust your instincts. You know, and I remember I had an economics professor that the first day he said, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And if something seems too good to be true, it probably is. And I've kind of, you know, passed hopefully those things down to my daughter's in the music business, and she's come across some shady people, and, you know, that she's fired and not worked with. And, you know, so just, yeah, kind of keep your antenna up when something like that comes along. And sure enough, I think what my parents taught me, you know, served me well, because I could see how that could, you know, if you start feeling that good, it could possibly spin into something else. And, you know, luckily, you know, I wasn't given the steroids, but it was just a little bit too good to be true for me. And I'm glad that my instincts served me well.
Yeah, you can see how guys get hooked into that, especially if they're dealing with injuries or feeling lethargic, and all of a sudden they get this boost, and, oh my goodness, where did this come from? And it's all natural. I mean, there's too much information out there these days. I think you're automatically suspicious, and there's so many policies in place. But back then, I could see guys getting sucked into that really easily. So, good stuff, Dave.
Yeah, Victor Conti, by the way. He was a bass player, by the way, for Tower of Power. That was his background.
Yep.
If you remember that band. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. All right. Coming
Not
up,
medical
Justin
school.
Turner's got an interesting idea to end extra inning games earlier. We're going to hear about that when we sweep the dial next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Skelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
This is my opportunity to push for a home run derby in extra inning.
See, there
Instead
you go.
Of playing 17. Instead of playing 17 innings, yes. Just in that, you get one extra inning, you play the 10th inning, no one scores, then you go to a home run derby. You take each team's three best hitters and you give them all, you know, five outs and see who hits the most homers.
Voice of L.A. Dodger Justin Turner, who wants to have a home run derby to end extra inning game. So he'll give you the 10th inning. You guys get the 10th inning played like a normal baseball game. If nobody scores, that's where you go to the home run derby. I got to tell you, I'm a bit of a purist when it comes to baseball. I don't like a lot of the proposals they've made about extra innings, starting with a runner on second and, you know, doing different things like that. I don't hate this. I'd actually be very curious to see this.
I don't like anything that departs from the actual game itself. It's like, remember when they were talking about doing the overtime thing in the NFL where you get to go for it on like 4th and 15 or something like that? Why would you do that? Just kick it off and keep playing. And, you know, and the same thing, you know, with baseball games, I never think they're too long. If it goes into extra innings, that's great. I mean, some of them are like 7-1 and it's never, one team's never in it. Those are boring, but you get to, you know, the 9th inning and it's tied and you get to keep watching and keep playing. To me, why not just keep it the way I... I don't like these kinds of things where all of a sudden it's just some random thing like a shootout or something like that. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I still remember seeing Dave Niehaus down in the clubhouse after a 19-inning game that got over around, I think it was like 12:45, and he looked like a little kid, and he was so excited, and he goes, "Jim, I didn't want that game to ever end." And I'm thinking... I didn't tell him this, but I was thinking, well, Dave, I did. My deadline was at 11 o'clock. And so I don't know. I'm with you, Bob. I mean, I'm a purist old school guy, too, but I think that'd be kind of fun. And Justin Turner was talking about being a hockey fan and how they end some games, I guess, with shootouts. And then we know in soccer how they do that, too. And I think it'd be fun. They're talking about Turner's idea anyway is to take the three best hitters from each team and line them up in the batter's box. Each hitter gets five outs. That could be fun stuff.
And to me, he reminds me, it's only one time that I can remember in recent memory on elite receivers and disappearing acts like Amari Cooper. That was the kid that the Raiders had a few years ago. Oh, that's right. That was Amari Cooper. This is who he is. And Dan, he doesn't love football. Hell with it. He stops his routes. He does all this. I wouldn't have paid this turd. No way in hell. Right. No way in hell would I have paid this guy.
Earlier today on Get Up, you had some comments surrounding Cowboys wide receiver Amari Cooper. I know you'd like to clarify those. So the floor is yours, Coach.
Oh, yeah. First off, I mean, I can't believe I said that, used that word. Obviously, it was a poor choice by me to say what I said about Amari.
The voice of Rex Ryan, who just tore into Amari Cooper, called him a turd, and then 2 hours later, forced to apologize. I think what people had an issue with is it just sounded like it was personal, like there was an issue between the two of them rather than, hey, I don't think this guy's clutch. I think he disappears in big moments or whatever he was trying to say. It just seemed like he made it personal. And that's what we always get told on this station. People think we're being told what to say. They don't ever tell us what to say, ever. They just say, don't make it personal. Don't make it if you think he's a bad coach, say he's a bad coach. He's not a bad person. So I think that's probably where people had an issue.
Well, don't take turd away from us. Turd is a great word. It's very descriptive. It's something that, you know, has to be used. It's sometimes it's perfectly descriptive for a player. And to me, the outrage kind of was, well, there was no outrage from me, okay? I mean, you're told to say things that are, you know, very opinionated and everything, and then all of a sudden you step over a line, and then everybody reprimands you for it. It seems a little strange. I just thought, I've never thought of Amari Cooper as a turd. So I think more than anything, he's sort of watering down the word. Don't misuse it. You can't just use it on everybody. I mean, use it when it's really warranted.
Use it sparingly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure that he was told to apologize there. It didn't seem sincere because from what I read, I mean, his comments, even during the apology, he continued to go at him saying he doesn't feel like Cooper showed up in road games, doesn't feel like he showed up against great cornerbacks. He probably should have just left it at that, and I'm sure he's second-guessing himself. But you look at Cooper's stats from this last year, 79 catches, nearly 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns, 15-yard average. So... a different definition of turd. He looks like a hell of a player to me, but I don't think Ryan feels like it warranted the contract that he got from the Cowboys.
Blandino, who is at the moment the head of supervisors and officials with the XFL after a long career in the NFL, he told the Toronto Sun, I believe, maybe I've got that wrong, so he told somebody in Toronto that the NFL competition committee now is looking favorable at the sky judge situation. The guy who stands there and makes a determination in real time, you know, that call was bad. He says the NFL is looking at that. Could you see the NFL adopting this thing from the XFL?
They don't have to adopt it from the XFL. The XFL didn't invent it. The XFL took it from college football. Every Saturday for years, we see play continue in a much faster and more efficient manner because they've got the essence of this.
That's Tony Kornheiser and Mike Wilbon talking about the reports that the NFL is considering using a sky judge like the XFL does. I love it. I think it'd be great. I think it'd be even better if they let you inside. You can hear the dialogue the way you did in the XFL. That was the most compelling part of that. But good to see that the NFL isn't just, you know, shutting it down because it's not their idea.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Bob. I think it was the best thing to come out of that. And I think the most important part is listening to the conversation that they have. Because, you know, in the NFL right now, it goes, back to New York, or they're looking at it on the camera there, and then they just come out and make the call. When you hear them talk through it, it makes more sense. And I think that people would get a better understanding of the game and the call itself. So, yeah, it's to me, that was a really good idea that the XFL had.
All right, coming up, we're going to get some thoughts on the Seahawks offensive line from somebody that knows that position inside and out, a man who spent 4 decades in the NFL as a player and a coach, and some of that time spent here as a Seahawks offensive line coach. Howard Mudd will join us. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.